Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, okay.
Hey, hi, ho.
Okay, nice. Well, I got the squeaky chair, huh? Did you guys switch it while I was up?
No.
God dang it, guys. You got me.
What happened to those guys?
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly. Free business paper needs or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and king of the stupid universe, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, Michael's number two.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
What are all those stains? Blood, urine, or semen? God, I hope it's urine.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. Today's topic,
Stamford, Connecticut. Stamford, Connecticut.
I'm excited to dive into the Stamford, Connecticut story arc.
Yeah, this was a bit of an era or a time in the show at the beginning of season three, following Jim's departure and beginning a new role in Stamford, Connecticut. We get to see how that kind of impacts everyone back in Scranton and how Jim kind of takes on this new chapter in Stamford for at least a handful of episodes before the show brings them all back together. So we're going to look at how the show kind of charts that time or navigates that time.
Scary times for Jim and
scary
Pam.
Times.
What will happen?
We're going to be covering just the time when we actually see the Stamford branch, so not after the merger. We're going to be talking Gay Witch Hunt up through the merger.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then we also got a conference room later. We got some trivia, but let's dive right in, guys. Let's dive right in. Well, we looked it up, Stamford, Connecticut, right there on the water across from Long Island.
Mm-hmm. The Long Island Sound is the body of
that's
water.
That's the view.
That
that's the view
the
that
window.
You can see. That
it took me like a few watches before I even realized there was when he says get a load of that view, I was mm-hmm. like, there's nothing out there.
Mm-hmm. We get to see the like exposition shots of it looks like a marina.
Right.
Are you happy with your watch now? You said it took you a few watches.
I'm still searching for that perfect watch.
Sorry.
Well, of course, at the end of season two, after Jim confesses his love to Pam at casino night and is ultimately rejected, he transfers out of Scranton branch and moves to Stamford, Connecticut, which is kind of a reveal in season three. He's not around at the start.
Yeah, it's jarring. It's just suddenly he's there, and we get that flashback, one of the few flashbacks we get on The Office in Gay Witch Hunt.
Mm-hmm. And we get Dwight's emotional reaction to losing Jim.
I miss him so much, Jim.
Yeah.
False.
Yeah, this is Dwight's time to shine. He's happy about it.
Something that's very common in a workplace is someone, obviously people leave the jobs all the time, and office places have to adapt and react to that kind of change.
Yeah.
We see Ryan move into Jim's desk. We see Pam often looking at Ryan, but it's nothing compared to the way that Michael looks at Ryan.
that's such a good cutaway.
We get to see Ryan maybe take on some more sales responsibility. We get to see Pam try to figure out what she does next in her personal life, and I suppose maybe her professional life as well, thinking more long-term into future seasons, now that she's no longer engaged to Roy. We get to see Michael kind of struggle with the fact that he thinks that Jim left to go work for Josh.
Yeah, and that wake of Jim leaving, there's a vacuum that, like you said, all these characters are filling. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice point, I think, in the whole arc of The Office, like the start of season three. I mean, obviously, season one was so short and unique and different. Season two completely resets the show. And season three, it almost resets the show again.
Definitely.
By taking Jim out and forcing the characters to deal with that, and then also introducing some new characters that we learned in
Stamford. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Josh, and, although we meet the rest of the Stamford branch in this episode, and we actually go there for the first time. We've met Josh Porter before, the Stamford branch manager, back in season 2, episode 16, Valentine's Day, when Michael has to go to New York and give a little presentation for David Wallace. So
that's right.
And the other two managers are a total joke. I can't remember the
Craigers.
Yeah, that's right. Craigers is totally inappropriate.
And Dan Gore from Buffalo.
Yeah, that's right. And they're kind of just a couple of chumps, just like Michael. But it's kind of established that Josh Porter's the
real
golden
chump
boy.
Parade.
Yeah, right.
Chumps. The chump parade that is right. Dunder Mifflin Corporate.
And Jan talks about Josh a lot and stuff. Yeah, we've heard about him before.
It is interesting how The Office expands its universe and shows another branch and gives you kind of this mirror of Dunder Mifflin Scranton in Stamford, which is a little bit more functional. The offices seem a little bit more professional, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Or a little more nicer. Yeah,
professional, definitely. I think it's a more modern space, big windows.
That establishing shot of their building, you're like, oh, this is a much bigger. Like,
yeah.
And obviously, they're in like the greater New York area, so it's going to be. You know, there's probably a lot more bigger buildings.
Stamford, Connecticut, very close to New York.
But when you think about going from Stamford back to Scranton, it's just like, that's quite a downsize that you're doing. You're now in this sort of industrial warehouse area. Yeah, like with hedges that you can't see past, as opposed to at the top of this building with a nice view.
That's right.
So I don't blame Jim for making the move. I mean, like he said, he pushed his chips in and didn't pay off.
Yeah,
it's interesting the way that the show expands
to,
its
Rogers,
location and setting. Yes, that's true.
That's right.
The show expands its location and setting and then gives Jim that sort of character development by being in a new place and seeing him, you know, work with a different manager, a different antagonizing coworker, and a different sort of romantic interest. And the way that that kind of coalesces in the merger after that threat of downsizing that kind of pervades the show throughout the first 2.5 seasons, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
One branch does finally close and it brings Jim back into the fold, but it also kind of brings a ton of new characters together and creates something different for the show. But it's interesting to watch the two offices operate in parallel.
Right.
While, you know, something is going on in Scranton, we get to see Jim deal with something small, such as we're trying to get that bag of chips for Karen.
Right.
For
right.
Stanford. Yeah.
Well, in a way, you get to see what Jan's been seeing this whole time that we haven't, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, there's, you know, Scranton branch is just a joke compared to something like Stamford, which seems to run very smoothly.
Right. Well, you mentioned expanding the universe. Like, it's interesting to just see the layout of a different office. And we get it a little bit later in season 5, too, on the business trips. But, like, in this one especially, we get to see a conference room meeting that's kind of competent. Like, you see Josh sitting there and actually just, like, going over the business and being like, hey, Karen, where are we at with this client?
They
and
have a joke at Scranton's expense. Like, he has to go over some, human
they have to go through the diversity initiative because of what happened at the Scranton.
And Larry Wilmore again. That's right.
So that's kind of a funny thing. It's like, we do need to sort of take the temperature of how bad is Michael at Scranton? And it's helpful to see this other branch. And the other characters in it. Even the way the desks are laid out is interesting. Like, the way they work, they shoot with that. Yeah, when they're staying late and doing the shots.
Yeah.
You know, the way you can kind of, you can see Karen in the background not actually drinking. And so that's kind of fun to just see how they shoot it around that office, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and speaking of the other characters, we kind of get a new Pam in a way. A new romantic interest for Jim, Karen Filippelli. And we get played by Rashida Jones.
Filippelli.
Filippelli.
And how about Danza?
Filippellers, how they hanging? To the left? To the right? Hello, Michael.
And of course, we also meet maybe a new Dwight, a new enemy for Jim. Frenemy. Andrew Bernard.
Andrew Baines
played
Bernard.
Played by Ed Helms.
Is that who plays it?
Get the whole nine nards. Large tuna.
I've seen my cellular
laying device on the charm.
Large tuna. Have you seen my cellular device?
One of the discussion questions I had for this topic, do you remember back when you were watching this live back in 2006, 2007.
And we used to be able to go out, throw the football around. Greener pastures back then.
Were you buying that we might stay in this world for a while? I mean, you know, as I mean, it's eight episodes that we spent, or seven episodes that we spent in the Stamford branch.
Well, I think yeah, of course. I mean, we look at where the show was. It hadn't been on the air for very long, and the first season is certainly much, much shorter than the second. So we had no idea, I think, as a viewer, or at least I personally did not, know where this was going to go. I didn't know that they were going to merge back together. I didn't anticipate that. I just think week to week, I was just hoping to...
Or how long it was going
to
take.
Yeah, you pay attention to the overall plot dynamics, but it's not as if this was a drama the way we have them now, and sort of, we call it like Golden Age of Television with all these hour-long dramas that you see where you're following... you know, a very long seasonal storyline. This is a sitcom, you know, that aired week to week. And so it's hard. I think it was hard to anticipate where it was going to go, especially because to go to a new location at the beginning of the season is totally different from where The Office was in season two. So that's what I remember. But
I'll take it for granted now because we've watched it so much. But it's crazy to think about how much change there is in this time. It's like we have this cliffhanger at the end of season two with Casino Night. And then suddenly it's like Jim's in a new office. Like
how
it was crazy stuff at the time.
Right. Well, really all we get between Jim and Pam during this time is that one phone call when he calls the office to talk to Kevin about fantasy football. And then Pam and Jim get to kind of share a quick conversation. And there's like a glimmer of hope for the audience that, oh yeah, we're coming back to this. Don't worry.
Yeah.
You think at the end of season two, Jim and Pam have never been closer in that moment where they kiss. Mm-hmm. And then at the beginning of season three, when you kind of get to see where that cliffhanger goes, they're literally miles and miles away from each other.
Right.
They're in completely different places. And I think as a viewer, I mean, thinking back to that time, there was kind of a beautiful sort of tension, not knowing where that relationship was going to go. Right?
Right.
It was a will they, won't they in the first two seasons. And now it's like where they go from here because they're so far apart. I think I'm thinking of Jim looking at that empty chair. While the, Mr. Brown is delivering his diversity seminar.
Right, the chair next
and
to him in the conference room.
The voiceover for Michael is when two people find each other, what should keep them apart.
Because the chair next to him, that's where she would normally falls asleep on Jim. It's this nice moment. And it's also...
During the episode Diversity Day, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
And it's kind of deepened by the fact that we know that Pam and Roy have called the wedding off. We learn that too right away. Mm-hmm. And they're eating, you know, chicken or fish. Right. And they have to eat all their leftover food. So it adds this element of like, okay, well, now Pam's not marrying Roy. She's single again. Jim's single. Like, this has to happen. But, crap, they're in different cities now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Karen's there. So they found a way to completely repackage that tension between Jim and Pam. And it works so well. Like, you mentioned that call they have. Like,
right.
Even Jenna Fischer and John Krasinski's chemistry is still, like, crackling just over that phone call. You know, like, it's kind of amazing how like, potent that is and how realistic it feels of, like... This, like, even the way when Pam picks up the phone, she's, oh my gosh, like, she can't help herself but have that reaction.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, all those feelings are still there. And it just sets up this amazing season of their relationship.
Jumping ahead to the merger when Jim comes back and he, like, tries to be like, hi, you know, like, I'm new here. Where's my desk? And she's like, she, like, runs and gives him a hug. And he's like, I was trying to do a little joke there. Like we hadn't met. And she's like, I know, I don't care.
There are a couple other moments like that as well during the convention when they're about to leave and Michael says to Pam, is there anything you want us to tell Jim? And Pam says, and then they just,
right.
But then later when Michael is on the phone with Pam, you get to see Jim kind of react knowing that Pam is just on the other end of that phone.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Or when the merger and branch closing is kind of happening and there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen. And, you know, Ryan says to Pam, oh, is Jim coming back? And Pam kind of downplays it. Oh, yeah. I don't know, maybe... Right.
Well, then, totally. Well, Jim goes also to talk to Josh Porter, goes into his office and is like, so about, this is back when he thinks that people are coming to Stamford, and he's like, you know, who's coming exactly? And, you know, Josh is like, I don't really want to talk about it. And well, then right as that happens, Jan walks in.
And they do such a good job foreshadowing that. And they kind of drop little breadcrumbs along the way that, like, Jim is not a great fit there in some ways. Like, even though he's like, always helping out Josh, and Karen's kind of eye rolls at him about it. Early on, right away, we get Karen mimicking Jim and being like, he's always looking at the camera like this. What is that? Which is a nice way of sort of, it's like no one's buying Jim, or it's like, okay, I forgot. Yeah. This is still this documentary.
It's great.
And now the Stamford branch has to deal with it for some reason.
Like, yeah,
I guess Josh signed on with this now too. We're going to let a crew in there. But I like that Karen mimics him right away of just like, okay, Jim's not the, you know, he's not a love interest anymore in
That's
the way
right.
he was to Pam, even though he ended up
at least
with
for
Karen.
Now. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. But that sort of the documentary feel really comes back in that moment. And,
yeah. Well, we talked about the Stamford branch being maybe a little bit more professional, a little bit more polished, but they do start to show some quirks, specifically
Call of Duty.
Mirroring my own life right now with Warzone. new game out there. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, your Call of Duty, which is to stay home and play Call of Duty.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah. That's very true.
Do your duty.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy that they play that in the office and how seriously that little conference room meeting with Andy.
Saboteur. Saboteur.
Fun. I'm going to kill you
a
for real.
Carrington.
We're on the German team. Wait, I think it's the new guy. He just says to Josh straight out, I think it's the new guy.
Wait, we're playing on teams?
Yeah.
Another way, Jim making, he doesn't quite fit in yet.
And, yeah.
You have a feeling like this isn't going to work out.
Well, there's another great moment in the Call of Duty thing where, they kind of like are building on that relationship between Karen and Jim a little bit, where he's like, she's can see over his shoulder that he's running into a corner,
just jumping. Yeah.
And she just walks up and shoots him in the back of the head. And
any like, last words?
Yeah, that's right. And then he's like, psychopath. And she kind of like gives, she has a lingering look.
I'll say, man, this season three, Jim in Stamford, this is some hot Jim. They got him. They like kind of loosened up his tie, the way his hair is. Like, there's just something he's got a certain quality about him where they're like, you know, this is single on the market Jim.
You know, the Call of Duty thing kind of makes me think of when Andy Bernard says, Andy Bernard does not lose contests. He wins or he quits them because they are unfair. And when I think of Jim, it's almost as if Jim either wins or he just doesn't take it seriously at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Where it's like when they play Call of Duty, he just doesn't care. He's going to...
Right.
You're a psychopath because you want to, you know... Right. Yeah.
It so seems like he's trying to care. But, like, I mean, it's another example of him, like, it's easier just to not care, you know, for Jim sometimes.
That's what Michael says during beach games,
That's
too.
Right.
Jim isn't taking this seriously.
Yep, yeah. Yep. Another way that Stamford mirrors Dunder Mifflin, you know, Jim trying to prank Andy, but then there's that part where Andy freaks out.
Oh, yes.
Or else I'm going to lose my freaking mind.
The way Jim, like, adjusts himself and looks at his screen again.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just kind of like a little thing where it's like, and he gives a look to the camera where he shakes his head no, and it's just like, okay, maybe he's...
We're not in Kansas anymore.
He just learned that he can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. Which is maybe why he has to do the faxes from future Dwight back to Scranton just to get a little pranking in.
Well, that's he says that fix. When he gets and he goes, ah, I missed that when he does the Gaydar call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they call him up
right.
And he has that feeling of just like, man,
he just hits the random keys on his keyboard
and he's not even
what's Gaydar? Oh,
yeah, that's right.
Right.
He's not even ready for it. You know, he's totally readjusted.
It's a great way to get out and give him time to actually, because then he eventually makes it and mails it to him.
Sends it.
But in the meantime, he's like, oh, Sharper Image is sold out. It's like, I can't. Deal with this right now, but I'm going to because I remember this and I miss it.
To think that he doesn't get the payoff from playing those pranks until watching the documentary several years later.
Well, and he must know it's for Pam because he's like, Pam's going to get receive the package, deliver it, and see him open it.
Right.
And we see Pam reacting to it like she knows.
Oh, that's right. At least.
So it's almost like he's communicating
that
with Pam.
That part, though, when he realized.
Yeah.
The little over his own buckle.
This era of the show is such a perfect coalescence of the mundane nature and the small storylines from the early seasons. A lot of the silliness that we see in the later seasons and the unresolved tension of Jim and Pam. I'm just thinking about that now, how... In these episodes, you have all of those things kind of working together, and so they're really, really, they're really great and compelling.
Still, some little shots of just random things. We get that shot of Meredith eating the Purell, the hand sanitizer.
Oh God!
Yeah, she eats about probably $90 worth of hand sanitizer right there. It's just funny. There's still little shots like that that kind of go away in later seasons. Mm-hmm. Like this early season three is still, you know, very early Office. But we get, meanwhile, back in Scranton, Phyllis gets married in Gay Witch Hunt.
That's right.
You know, cool.
Well, what about Diwali when they have their late night drinking like it, back Stanford. I think is another episode where
keep
it's like
$20 a person this time.
I think that's
what did they do last
detail.
Time? Yeah. You know, what did they do last time?
They balled out.
Who knows?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, that's an example where it's like by this point, maybe it was starting to feel like we were going to spend more time here. Mm-hmm. Like Jim's getting pretty comfortable here. I mean, you've also got initiation with the squeaky chair, and like there's kind of a dynamic building between Karen and Jim and Andy.
Karen goes from being kind of annoyed or kind of put off by the way Jim looks at the camera to being kind of charmed by the way that he deals with these little issues around the office.
Well, it seems like Stanford's a little cold, a little like, you know, I mean, what we learn later is that Josh Porter puts himself before others, unlike, I guess, unlike Michael Scott, but in his principle, his personal principle, maybe not in action, but
it's a management style. It doesn't work for Tony Gardner.
That's really, it doesn't work style. For a lot of them. Yeah. Let's go back to the convention.
Yeah. The convention's an interesting, it's because this is episode 2 of season 3 and we don't see Stanford at all, but they have an interesting way of getting around that, which is let's explore Josh a little more. Let's see Jim and Josh's friendship. And contrast it with Dwight and Michael. And so they have this kind of third location for them to go and all mingle. And we get to see these sort of face-to-face Stanford versus Scranton things that at least Michael feels like it's that the whole time. He's just very defensive.
Oh.
And when Josh makes that comment about, hey, if we absorb your branch, we'll make sure there's a place for you, which Michael is just like, it's on.
Right. Or another shot of Midori, perhaps, and then they all laugh. Oh, sorry, kind of an inside joke. There's this bartender in Stanford. Inside jokes. Love inside jokes.
I think in that episode too, we also get to see Michael really directly confront Jim about why he left, thinking that it was because of is he funnier than me? Right? He's very very confrontational about Jim about why he left and why he thinks. You know, the insecurity he feels next to Josh. You know?
And when Michael learns that it's not about him, that it's actually about Pam, he shifts right away into like, oh, well, like, no, like, Pam's single now. Like, you can...
Yeah. Like, oh, you don't know.
Like,
yeah.
Right away, Michael, it just goes from being really defensive about it to wanting to help Jim out and, like, let him know that there's still a chance, probably because he wants Jim to come back, but, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we know there's a lot of interesting conversations throughout the convention.
We also see Jim kind of extend the hand to Michael when Michael is throwing his party and those two guys from Hammermill come up and they say, oh, do you guys work together? And Jim says, no, we used to. Now we're just friends.
Yeah.
Michael says, best friends.
Which I wonder if like Jim's okay saying that now because he knows he doesn't have to go to work with Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like... I could say we're friends now.
Like, Michael's not going to dress like him, like he's in The Secret, buy grape soda.
He's not going to like figure out a way to make me go to a bar with him after work.
Yeah.
So it's like, fine, yeah, we're friends now.
There's also just, I mean, you know, just in comparing Scranton and Stanford, like Michael looks like an idiot that whole time in front of Jan and Josh, you know, giving his per diem tip to the guy cleaning up plates and all these other things. But
no one was calling you. Mm-hmm. You don't have email on your phone.
but then of course like he lands that we can now sell Hammermill products like, you know, so effortlessly because he's able to connect with people. It's like we saw back in The Client, you know, with Tim Meadows, like he's able to connect with that guy in his hotel room and
I mean, he almost does the same thing in Pretzel Day too, when he like somehow makes that huge sale, when he's like going crazy, jumps at some point he makes that huge sale.
That's right.
Mr. Caselli.
Caselli, yeah.
But yes, professionally at least, Michael's saving grace is that he is a great salesman. That comes through time and time and again, and this is a perfect little moment that encapsulates that, because Josh and Jan say they're exclusive with Staples, but Michael's sort of willingness to kind of make personal connections, he's creative enough and ambitious enough and delusional enough to challenge what seems like it would be impossible sometimes.
And he does it wearing white pants and a swag Microsoft Office shirt.
Swag.
That's his outfit. He somehow gets that deal done.
I decorated my condo with all of my swag.
Yeah. I now want to go back and look at his condo a little closer.
Where's all the swag?
Is there any swag from there in a corner somewhere? Yeah, Jan probably got rid of it all. Wisely.
Before we move on to the merger, is there any other moments in Stanford?
Just Michael hitting the buttons on that BlackBerry mascot guy. That's great. And Jerome Bettis. Why do they call him the bus?
Yeah,
because he's afraid of flying.
Yeah. I would say throughout all this, back at Scranton, we're seeing Dwight have the room to sort of become the powerful man he wants to be.
Right.
Without Jim there anymore, he's really making moves. Obviously, the coup is huge for that.
And the unexpected enemy of Andy.
This is a period where we're getting one of my favorite Dwight things, which is him and Angela having secret conversations facing opposite directions in the same room. They don't go to that as much later in the show, but at this point, we're just in these beautiful times where very tight shots from far away, you know, both of them talking very seriously. And the coup is like a crazy episode for Dwight. It's like the entire scene about Crentist is one of the best acted scenes, I think, of the whole series between Steve Carell and Rainn Wilson. It's so tense and so well shot and well written. Yeah.
A forgotten gem from that episode is Hug It Out, Bitch. That's you can stand up.
Truly.
You can Hug It Out, Bitch.
And I'm sure, you know, I think at some point we should do an episode about the coup. I think it's a hugely important relationship.
Great episode.
If we do a Dwight and Michael episode.
I have a laundry machine.
Which we should do. So we'll talk about that later. But yeah, let's move on.
For now, we're moving on to the merger, episode 8. This is, of course, now we've learned Josh Porter took another job at Staples. Jim, you know, tells the camera, hey, say what you want about Michael Scott. He would not do that, right? So Michael's caring about his branch and his family, I guess, wins in the end. So we get some people moving from Stamford to Dunder Mifflin, and some folks that we actually haven't really met yet. Tony Gardner, we have met before. He has a brief moment with Karen.
Yeah, with the vending machine.
Yeah, he's like, Karen, can you help me at the vending machine? I need your skinny little arms. But we haven't really met Martin Nash yet, who Jim or and Hannah. Martin walk in together talking about sports. So I guess they're buddies.
We
now
see Hannah very quickly during the Call of Duty thing. I think the camera pans over her, but she doesn't have any lines or anything like that.
Yeah,
very serious, kind of almost like a taller Angela is what Hannah seems to be.
Brunette, tall brunette Angela.
But we get to see them, as the Stanford characters come into the office, we get to see Michael greet each of them individually and make them feel uncomfortable individually.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Yes. Oh, Karen.
The terrible manager.
Yeah. You're exotic looking. Was your dad a GI?
Oh, man. One of the cringiest moments, for sure. And
then the pan over to Pam.
Possibly Filipina.
God. Oh, boy.
Pam one is thing horrified too, in that
I forgot to mention from Stanford too, because we talked about this watching the episode, was the we get drunk Jim on the bike.
Oh yeah,
he's obviously you know, inspired to ride his bike
closer,
just like Josh, but he's not wearing bike gear. He's just wearing his work clothes. Rookie mistake. And biking at what appears to be some sort of cruiser. Anyway, but we get drunk Jim only a few times throughout the whole show. You identified the other ones. He falls into the bush here. We hear him on the phone.
In Niagara.
Right, right.
When Jim and Pam go for that long lunch, or they never found the bottom of the bottomless mimosas.
That's right. That's right.
PDA, season 7.
PDA, yeah. There you go.
And then I think there's one other time, but I can't think of it off the top of my head.
Yeah. Only a few. But this is pretty can ride a bike straight, Jim. Crazy.
Nice basket.
Anyway. One by one, after, of course, they merge branches, Michael's going to scare off all of these employees. But this is, we all decided that the Stamford branch arc seems to end with the merger. And I think really with the first person quitting, which is Tony Gardner.
Pepperoni Tony.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Yeah. He didn't think Lazy Scranton was funny.
I think one of the cringiest moments in the whole show is when they try to lift Tony up out of the table. That's a tough one for me.
He's like, don't. Really,
I usually love all the cringe moments. I love Scott's Tots and episodes like that. But that particular moment with the table is very, very tough.
I mean, really, can you imagine them coming from a Stamford branch where it seems like things are pretty quiet and straightforward to this? One thought that occurred to me too is when Andy and Michael are like, both like thrusting on others on either side of Tony, like during the Night of the Roxbury bit. Andy must have been the one at Stamford that was probably like lowest rung, you know, like he was probably like, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, Andy's gonna thrive in this office.
Well, yeah, and he's,
you know,
he's like, now's my chance. You know, chaos is a ladder. and in the merger, Andy wants to climb it.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, he does come in with that regional director in charge of sales title, and he does seem to, you know, kind of suck up to Josh the same way that he does to Michael. It's unclear how much that's rewarded.
Right.
But to your point, he does come in. I'll be number two in this office in 6 weeks. How? Mm-hmm. Personality mirroring, name repetition, never breaking off a handshake.
It's the same way he's going to get through anger management.
Yeah.
any other big thoughts about the Stanford story arc?
This is the most natural endpoint, I think, because Andy obviously lives throughout the entire show. Yeah. Karen goes through the end of this season and then comes back in Branch Wars and in Threat Level Midnight.
Yeah. It could be argued that you could go through the convict because Martin Nash is really central to that episode and quits at the end of that. And then, I mean, Hannah is around for a little bit and quits
off screen
after back from vacation.
We don't see the actual Stanford branch after that.
Yeah. I think we aligned on this being kind of the natural endpoint because we don't see that separate location.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
It's interesting too, to see Jim get reintroduced to the people he already knows when he comes back, and it's like people are, that's when he has that moment with Toby, like the fist bump. Like, is that your thing?
Oh, that's a tough one, yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
So rude.
They also reset the dynamic where Jim actually slots in as Michael's number two instead of Dwight.
Yes.
Which causes some ripple effects in Benihana Christmas and other,
Like it's
and then
not
Dwight
even
takes the
to
number three fight to Andy.
Right, exactly. Then Dwight and Andy are pitted against each other.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. We see maybe the chummiest moment between Ryan and Jim in the whole show. When, all the excuses, look alive, Halpert, welcome back.
Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. But that's where it ends. And then, of course, the great moment with Kelly in the kitchen. How are you doing? I just told you after the whole
celebrity babies.
Yeah. So that's an interesting dynamic. But yeah, then, by the end of the merger, it's kind of like right back where we were with a couple new faces.
It feels good to be back.
That's how they're going to do this.
Yeah.
But Stanford, it took a while.
Stanford was a little cold, a little boring.
Distant. It wasn't the office.
It was
fun to watch them kind of play out small storylines and little office moments, similar to the beginning of the show with Jim, Karen, Andy, and I guess to a lesser extent, Josh. Mm-hmm. But it is nice to see everyone return to the fold. And then obviously there's like new characters introduced that, Jim, Pam, and Karen are all coexisting in the same office space. Andy and Dwight, you're coexisting in the same office space and eventually competing for Angela. Mm-hmm. So those are dynamics that are born out of the rest of the season, but it is nice to see things kind of converge.
And Andy is such an important ingredient in this whole Stanford arc. I mean, while he's in the actual Stanford branch,
right?
Because his personality is kind of different than what it becomes, even not that much later into season three and season four, because he's this really kind of East Coast preppy kind of asshole vibe going on. And that carries over certainly until he punches a hole in the wall and then it sort of changes. But I can see why that, like, you need that element because we don't want to watch just an efficient kind of regular office in Stanford. That's why you need Michael Scott. You need these people. That's why the show's so funny.
Right.
So it's like you need to have Andy be that role because Josh certainly isn't. It's sort of, I forget who made the joke of like, you don't want to see, it's not as funny watching a stand-up comedian who's like super in shape. Or like physically,
right?
It just doesn't make them funnier.
That's right.
And it's not funny to watch an office that just works well,
right?
So it's good they come back to Scranton.
Definitely, of course, definitely.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Well, with that, let's move on to a little conference room.
Conference room, 5 minutes.
All right, so our first conference room topic is just something that we were discussing, kind of hanging out. We were talking about if you had a vanity plate for your car outside of the William Hung inspired.
Yes.
Well hung. What would be some good office vanity plates?
Okay.
Do we keep it to eight characters?
So we're keeping it to eight characters, and just to make this fun,
or less,
you spell them out, and then we'll figure out what that means.
Love it.
Oh, we're spelling them all out? Okay,
some of mine aren't that.
That's fine. Yeah,
they're pretty easy to figure out.
Pretty easy.
I have a couple that are.
All right, all right.
Do you want to go round table, or you just want to go?
Let's go around. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can start here.
Go ahead.
I've got I'll give you a tough one to start with.
Great.
FLDSGLTN.
Florida Stanley.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Say it again?
It's not, not quite. FLDSGLTN. This is like, there's no way. He'll get it.
What is it?
FLDSGLTN?
Full disagulation.
That's great.
But nice, you want one. People on the road to know what this is, right?
No, I'm trying to stump
for this
them.
Game.
Okay. Okay, sure.
For this game. Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to get any of these. All right, here's one.
My other ones are a lot easier.
This one's pretty easy. BTS, BRS, BSG.
Wait, you give it to me again?
BTS, BRS, BSG.
I don't know. What is it?
Wait. Bears beats Battlestar
Galactica. Beats Bears Battlestar Galactica.
Well, I took this in a different direction. Here's mine. Big Tuna.
I also wrote,
oh, yeah, nice.
I also wrote Big Tuna, for nice. Sure.
I'll give any.
I also wrote Worm Guy.
Worm Guy, like that. I have M Skarn.
Yeah.
Yeah, do the Skarn. Yep. Yeah.
Y-E-P-P-R-S. Just a Yeppers.
Oh. Nice. That's good. I like Yeppers. Yeah, that's really good.
I have Shulala.
That's Shulala.
Right. Eight letters. Yeah.
That's nice.
Here's one for it. Here's a challenge. FNRTHNGS.
Wait, what is it?
Finer Things.
Yes.
Oh,
nice.
Oh, nice, nice, nice.
Nice, nice, nice.
I have Long Tim.
Long Tim. Oh, that's very good.
Did I Stutter without vowels?
Mm-hmm.
Pretzel Day without vowels.
Oh,
just
nice,
PRTZL Day.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I did the number 4 DASTNLY.
That Florida.
Florida
Stanley.
That's good.
Wow. I just had a straight up Dunder Mifflin, DNDR MFLN.
What? Oh, yeah. Nice.
Here's one for you. DMDUZGB.
Oh. Dunder Mifflin does get his music. Yeah, that's good.
I also had STE401.
Sweet 401.
Good one, man. Here's one. Unarmed.
We are unarmed. Knights of the Night.
You'd have to get a Knights of the Night outline, or the little thing you do around a license plate, mm-hmm. the frame. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
Knights of the Night, and then it would say unarmed.
I have Nard Dog.
Nard Dog, obviously.
Okay, I accidentally typo. I wrote Nard God, which would also be funny.
Mm.
here's one. Here's
Randy
a tough
Bernard's
one.
Kids, Nard Pups.
Nard Pups. Here's a tough one to figure out.
I did not realize this is what we were trying to do.
This was fun. BTMDBRKS. Might help.
BTMD.
BTMD is the first word, uh-huh. and then BRKS.
Breakers or something like
that? No, I don't know.
First word is BTMD.
BRKS. What is it? Just
Butt Mud Brooks.
Oh, Butt Mud Brooks. Okay.
PRSN.
Butt Mud Brooks.
I also had PRSN Mike for Prison Mike.
Prison Mike. That's a good one, too. Yeah. That's it.
I had Baby Wawa.
Oh, that's good.
Mr. Poop. And then, I don't know how you would do this, but What Up Cynthia?
Well, wow. Nice.
That's great.
That's good.
That's great. That's I think good. that's all I got. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so this next topic comes from Haley on Instagram, who called out that in our coronavirus/corporate episode, we could have talked about, number one, whether or not corporate would ask the Dunder Mifflin employees to come in or work from home.
Mm.
But then also that we could have talked about how now when you wash your hands, you're supposed to think happy birthday twice.
Right.
The idea, we could have done Michael singing the high harmony on happy birthday twice.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
So a couple people.
Happy birthday, buddy.
Happy birthday, Creed.
Skip around the room. A couple people have sent us the hand-washing diagram with other Office songs
right.
Sent to us. So Jess on Facebook sent us The Hunter. Took me by the hand.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
it's good because it's a hand-themed song, too.
And then Kayla on Facebook sent us the Do the Skarn. Step to the right, and you wash that hand. Left, make new friends. Tie some yarn. That's how you do the scarf.
You'd flip water all over.
Yeah. Are there any? So we were just going to do some other office theme songs that you could sing to yourself while you're washing your hands. Did you guys have some?
Goodbye, Toby.
Goodbye, Toby.
Just sing that whole.
Early morning yesterday. Yeah.
I'm washing before the dawn. Germs got to be moving on. Okay, sorry.
I have a little drummer boy. Take me home, country roads.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Soapin' and washing with love.
Soapin' and washing with love.
Whoa. Another plug, please, for Spinning and Reelin'. Go listen to that song on Spotify.
By the Grassroots.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Creed Bratton's solo album. It's really good.
Rockin' Robin, Washin' Robin.
Oh, that's good.
Or Rockin' Washin'.
That's good, too. Would you change your mind? I'll be first in line. Honey, I'm still free.
Are we doing this again?
No.
I was trick you guys into it.
Dunder Mifflin is a part of Sabre.
Oh, that's a good one.
Zombie.
Yeah.
And then last...
love me, say that you love...
The tuna! Last...
Oh, closer I am. The last one I have was just it is a song from The Office, but it's also our theme song, Out of Paper.
Of course,
or the B side version, Out of Paper,
Out of Stock.
Boom boom.
Yeah.
Friendly faces around the block. Wow, Stanley, you have a lot to learn about your own culture. you have a lot to learn. I'll make you a mix.
Yeah. Stanley says you are not as fun as your Jamaican brothers. Yikes.
All right.
All righty, here we go.
Time for some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Woo! All right, guys, I did some trivia just going through episodes from this arc, so we're going to stay right in the fold here.
Love it.
All right, here we go. Question one. What exactly will it say at Ryan's 10-year high school reunion?
Ryan Howard is a junior sales associate at a middling paper supply firm.
Oh, so close. So close, mid-range paper supply firm, not middling. Very close. Again, correct for anyone else except Edwin. Need that 100%. Fill in the blank, quote from Michael. This company has made it my responsibility today to put an end to blank years of being weirded out by gays.
500 years?
100,000.
Oh, 100,000 years.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to move away from the number questions, but that's such a crazy number. What is the exact name of the convention?
I don't know.
I don't know off the top of my head. What is it?
It's the annual Northeastern Mid-Market Office Supply Convention.
Wow. Right.
That's a tough one. What are the name of the reps that come to hang out with Jim and Michael?
I don't know.
Eric?
Evan. Evan's the other guy, and then he brings his friend to introduce himself. Arnie Reisman. These are tough. What's the name of the cartoonist Pam dates, and how do Ryan and Kelly know him?
It's Kelly's neighbor.
Yes. First name.
Is his name Eric?
No.
Oh my God.
Shares the name with the CEO of the company.
Randall. No, Alan.
Alan, correct. Mm. Correct, Alan.
Freedom fries.
More freedom fries, yeah. Michael.
He loves ketchup.
Michael says that Josh reminds him of somebody he went to high school with. What does that person from Michael's high school do for work now?
I don't know.
He's trying
car
to like
wash or something?
He's trying to like cut Michael there. He's like, yeah, he reminds me of this guy I went to high school. He's a TV announcer for the Eagles.
Oh.
I went really deep and looked at announcers for the Eagles in these years, and no one was really in the same age as Michael, so I don't believe Michael. He lied, turns out. Okay, what road did Ed Truck die on? Trunk as a skunk flying down.
Route 6?
Route 6, very correct, which is a highway in Pennsylvania. When Michael and Dwight are discussing the statue-turned-robot to honor Ed Truck, what two features does Dwight suggest to keep the robot from turning on them?
Extension cord?
Yes, a 6-foot extension cord.
And make it smaller than a human.
Yes.
Three-quarter size.
Yeah, make it a 2/3 size, not life size.
Life size, and Dwight's like, better make it 2/3.
Easier to stop if it turns on us. Right away, Dwight's like, it's going to turn on us. It's a robot.
Yeah.
What's the fake name that Jim uses to call the distributor for Hers Chips?
Oh.
Says, this is blank from the West Side Market.
I don't know.
It's a tough one.
Eric.
Mike. Eric. What flavor of soda is the can Dwight is trying to shove the bird into for the funeral?
It's green.
It's green? So it's probably
lemon lime.
Lemon lime. Good job. What's Hannah's last name?
Smut Ridge Bar.
Yes, sir. And last one. Kevin suggests Cugino's as for a goodbye group lunch that Phyllis is organizing. But Angela doesn't want to go because it's far away. Mm-hmm. Where is Cugino's located?
I don't want to go all the way to blank.
Yes.
Carbondale?
Dixon City?
No. What is it?
Honesdale?
Dunmore. Very good. Dunmore.
I like how we're learning all these cities in Pennsylvania.
I know. I looked it up, though.
Honesdale?
Honesdale.
Cugino's is a real place. Looks great in Dunmore. It's only an 8-minute drive from downtown Scranton.
Dunmore.
So.
Okay.
Angela doesn't want to drive 8 minutes, I guess. That's it.
All right. Well, thanks, man. There we go. Hey, and everybody at home, thank you so much for listening. Please, please hit us up.
We have plenty of messages. You make it sound really desperate.
Send us some messages. We're excited to do some mailbag episodes
soon. Please watch the path.
503-694-9314. Call us and leave us a message. We love to play them on the show. You can email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com, or on Facebook and Instagram, Michael Scott Podcast Company. We're on Twitter at Michael Scott Pod. And we have a website, michaelscottpod.com. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who runs our social media and designs our artwork. This episode was recorded in Portland, Oregon.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. We love and appreciate every one of you. Can't wait to be back next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the solid.
Yes, sir.
Love me, say that you love me. Boom me, boom.
Stop.
Go on and boom me. Love me, say
this
that
is not
you
fair.
Love me.
It's gonna be my head all day, please.
Boom me. Go on and boom me. Love me, love
this is not
me.
A proportionate
say
response.
That you love me. Boom me, boom me. Go on and boom me. I don't care about anything but you.
Whatever happened to those guys?
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.